and welcome to the Muslim Sheroes of Minnesota podcast, where we spotlight the Muslim women of the Minnesota community. My name is Nosheena Hussain, and I'm the executive director of RISE, Reviving the Islamic Sisterhood for Empowerment. Our mission is to amplify the voice and power of Muslim women through storytelling, leadership development, and civic engagement. What is a Shiro? A Shiro is a female trailblazer who is creating change in her community. She takes risks, she challenges misconceptions, and addresses injustices. Shiros are on a mission to build a better world, and the sisterhood is here to support them and lift their voices.
Meet Johanna Osman. Johanna is a lifelong entrepreneur making financial services accessible to Muslims who don't use interest. Alongside other community leaders, she founded Second Community Resource and advocates for zero-interest home mortgages and asset-based lending practices. In a time when predatory lending practices dominate the banking system, Johanna is disrupting the cycle to fulfill the dream of owning not just a house, but a home. Listen to her story in her own words.
I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Grand Rapids, as my father would say, is the greatest mid-sized city in America. Such a strange thought, but that's what my dad used to say. And it really was. We grew up in a neighborhood, kind of a suburban neighborhood where you could walk to anywhere you wanted to go. And there was a lake right in the middle of our town. And all of our life was focused around that. I am the sixth of seven children. And by the time I was 10, we moved to Ann Arbor. And by that time, my three oldest siblings were either married or off in college or out of the house. So it was, then there was kind of our nuclear family of four kids. After my parents were divorced, we moved to Ann Arbor. We moved to Milwaukee. And then I went to college in Ohio. So when people say, well, where are you from? I just say, I'm Midwestern. After I married and moved around, I've lived in, I think it was 22 different houses by this time. So now I'm 63 years old. I don't know, six states I think we've lived in. So, I mean, yeah, I consider my roots in Grand Rapids, because the family, my father always lived there, and that's where I stayed with my dad in the last couple of years of his life. My time in Ann Arbor, both my closest sister and I are visual artists, drawing and painting, but I was also really excited about science. So my sister went on a tour at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor and came back with pamphlets about medical illustration for me. And that was it, boy. And I was probably in seventh grade at that time. So I had really planned the rest of my life to be trained and an active medical illustrator, you know, to make the illustrations for books and posters and any kind of instruction. My interest in medical illustration was the focus for how I was choosing what colleges I was going to apply to. I applied to six colleges in North America that have medical illustration departments. So that was those are my choices. But I got this little pamphlet about freshman tutorials at Ohio Wesleyan. It's a teeny tiny little college in the middle, right in the smack dab middle of Ohio. And they were offering a freshman tutorial about cultural literature. Something, you know, very just like out of my realm completely. And so I chose Ohio Wesleyan after being, you know, accepted at all these colleges because it was very close to one of the other big ones, Ohio State. And Ohio Wesleyan, that tutorial was great, but it was only, you know, the first 3 months of my entire college career. But I loved that. West African French Literature, that was the name of it. So I'm at I'm graduating from high school. My parents knew that I was searching for my religion. I'd grown up in a Catholic family and went to Catholic schools with nuns who were amazing, but I just had doubts about what I actually believed in. So my mother at my high school graduation gave me a book called The Encyclopedia of World Religions. And all summer I read that thing from front to back. And right in the middle is Islam. And the thing that struck me about it was so simple. You believe that there's one God, God created everything. If you need anything, you ask God. And in that article, there were things about the equality of women. Now, this is in the 1960s, this is 76. And my mother was divorced and had been raising us as a divorced woman. And in those era, in that era, the restrictions against women were even, you could not open a bank account. You could not buy a home without the signature of either a husband, usually a husband. It was very difficult for single women completely. And that was before credit cards and all that stuff. So I read it from kind of a feminist point of view, more as I studied Islam. So I took my book when I went off to college. Mom drove me down there, and I found myself in this little college in the middle of Ohio that was like a magnet for all the foreign students. They had an English language program, and everybody, especially from the petroleum countries, were coming there. Students were coming there to learn English and then go off to other American universities around the country. So I had this enormous like audience or resource of people who were Muslim, men that were Muslim, who would answer my questions. And in some of my art classes, there were brothers from Libya who were sent there by the broadcasting company to learn art and then do the graphics that go along with filmmaking and running the television. And those guys started their own halakha and invited me and a couple other people that were interested in Islam. And from that education, it was wonderful. And really, it took me a while, but I decided after a couple events and after a couple questions needed to be answered, I made my shahada. So I used my art when things were really tough, and I was a new Muslim woman. I also have a really strong sewing background. My grandmother and my mother were both really excellent seamstresses. So I started a company called the Hijab Company for, you know, working American women, I mean, women Muslims living in the United States that needed practical clothing, you know, needed clothing that they could wear to work or school or wherever they wanted to go. And they didn't, and they were American, you know, they didn't, I'm not an Arab. I'm not a Pakistani. Why would I dress in these ethnic clothing that doesn't speak for me? We made gorgeous clothing. And then I spent the whole time illustrating. It was in the era of mail order. So catalogs and things. So we sent out a kind of a trifold catalog, and I illustrated everything and learned the whole printing process. And it was fun, so much fun. And we had a mailing list of over 3,000 people all over the world, actually. I was divorced and I married an Egyptian that was needing a few more years of his medical instruction. So we married and moved from Ohio to Utah. I knew every Muslim in Utah in 1990, 95, we moved there. And so he finished his education, and he got an offer to work in a medical, I would say medical device company here in Bloomington. And so we moved here, and my youngest child at that time was 5. And we lived here in Minnesota from 97 until right after 9/11 in 2001. So we had 6 kids living in the house, and it was dangerous to be seen as a Muslim. I was wearing hijab. Those 2 girls were wearing hijab. And my husband is from Egypt, and he had a position kind of waiting for him at the medical college. So we arrived in Cairo almost a month after, I mean, like the 10th of October. So yeah, we made that change real quick. So I lived in Egypt for 6 years, and then I came back. I have always been interested in Islamic finance. So I needed to understand what are the rules, and how can you do it? And is there anything that already exists in the United States that can be utilized without it having a name, that it's Islamic this or Muslim that? And then the question of interest was, you know, how do you finance, how do you bring money into your startup company without getting a loan from a bank that you pay back with interest? So a lot of us were talking about that. A lot of immigrants were coming and recognizing that it's really tough to be an entrepreneur in this country unless your first step is running a bank. You know, I mean, we couldn't figure it out. And then as I got older and my kids got older and we were really needing to understand more about Islamic finance, my first action that kind of led towards it was to tell the bank that we had been dealing with for all of my life, really, we will establish trust in this bank if you can figure out, because I can't tell you, I'm not an expert, if you can figure out how to invest the funds in this trust Islamically, you know, within the Islamic guidelines. So I gave them a couple numbers to search around, and they did really a good job and talked to a lot of people, and finally found an American Islamic scholar in finance. Dr. DiLorenzo was guiding them to their like stock indexes, their Islamic indexes, where you can see what you want to invest in and then compare it to the index. And so if these things pass the tests that have to be passed to be part of that index, then go ahead. And that changes a little bit, but not often. When they finally got this system up and running, my kids and I were living here in Minnesota, and Dr. DiLorenzo was going to come for the launch of the trusts that we had established and the investment portfolio, and finally meet the bankers that he'd been talking to all these years. He couldn't come. So he you know, Skyped in or whatever it was. But I had all these people that had actually come to Minneapolis, you know, to meet him, and were really excited, and the bankers were there, so that there was somebody to talk to, and just to, you know, to get the group to come together. So we went to Afro Deli, and we had put a bunch of tables together, and there were 30 of us in the room. And then when the bankers spoke, and I told them specifically, I said, please mention 401ks and how you can modify your 401k to make it halal. And then we kind of, you know, we ate and broke off into a kind of our interest groups. And then we saw that there was a big interest. There were 30 people in that room who were interested in Islamic finance from different aspects. And we saw that something needed to be addressed. I mean, we needed to be an organization. We didn't even know what kind of an organization. My interest was in investing cleanly. So that was my interest. And other people were really a lot of entrepreneurs in our community with the million-dollar businesses that are, you know, privately owned, and they don't, nobody's got any savings. Nobody has 401ks for, nobody has any benefits for their workers. Nothing planned for the future, nothing saved and invested for, you know, so many good business people out there that don't know anything about how the American system works and the workarounds for the haram stuff. So a lot of us got together, about 15 of those 30 got together soon after, and we talked and we realized that the most dire need was, especially for the large Somali families who would not touch interest at all. They needed to buy homes because they had average 6 kids. It's vitally important for families of those sizes to own their own homes. They destroy rentals, and there are no rentals left that are affordable and big enough for that, for those families. So we were really focusing mainly on those large families who would not buy a home with an interest-bearing mortgage. So our job was to really research and make sure that there was there were resources that were truly halal. There are companies that call themselves halal, but our scholars that we respect really said they don't pass. But the three companies that the scholars did say pass, only one of them was really operating here in the state, and they didn't even have an office here. There is a community of non-Muslims that are either, you know, like Minnesota Housing Finance Agency or larger banks or even community banks that are willing to do some experimentation with zero interest mortgages of different sorts. And on the other side, the Muslim community, there are some that are really, I mean, the most knowledgeable, that the sheikhs that we consult with are very liberal in the definitions to make it possible to do this. It doesn't have to be called Sharia anything. If you just design that contract correctly, as long as it's done right the first time, it can sail on. You don't need an advisory board that you have to pay money to come in and make sure that you're staying compliant like you were 4 years ago. This is, you know, 14 centuries old, this stuff. It has changed only by application. How do we use them? It's the same stuff. So we're fighting between groups that don't want it to be connected with Islam, which is fine with me. I don't care. You know, I want Minnesota, any finance agency in Minnesota to see these contracts as with the value that they have. And the greatest value is that they're not loans. They are investment, you know, they're joint investments in this home. By the time we, you know, got organized and we were calling ourselves SECAN, it's SECAN Community Resource. And one of the Somalis actually chose that, you know, suggested that name. SECAN is an Arabic word where the root of it, and really the word itself, but the root of it is all three things of stability, peace, and home. So a place that you settle. SECAN for us is really the perfect word. It's exactly what we do because, you know, unless you have that stable home, you can't find peace. You know, you're always agitated. You're always alert for what could go wrong. So we, that I thought was a brilliant choice of a word. I just thought that if families could get hooked up with these zero interest mortgage companies, then they could buy their house. You know, I had no idea how Section 8 worked. I didn't know that most of our families that come to us are not living in the big multifamily, you know, complexes. They're living in private homes with private landlords, and it's squalor. I mean, things are not getting fixed and they don't know their rights. And so we, as the story becomes clearer, we started reaching out to other resources like Homeline and the Housing Justice Center. And we are seeing these primary roadblocks that are not hard to change or overcome. But if I don't know about them, and they don't really they don't know that they're movable, you know, we have to, unfortunately, we were learning through the problems of the families that were coming to us. But once we learned it, right? And a lot of times we'd have a couple moms come to us, even though they're probably, you know, major businesswomen, but their role as mom is the thing that they value the most. And that means I rule this household. So they will come to us when we say, you should do this and this and this. And they're like, how can you tell me to do that? Do you understand what life is like in this house? You know, you see me, I've got this kid is attached to this hip and this kid. So mashallah, and all of us that are dealing with this community are seeing that they are thriving, but with nothing. I mean, they're starting businesses that turn into millions within a couple of years. They don't recognize that there are barriers. They come to me and say, how do I do this? You know, I want to do this. How do I get over that? That thing is in the way. I was like, well, I didn't even realize, you know. So we're learning a lot from them. Our board is pretty much 6 out of the 10 are African, and 5 out of those are born in Africa. So we have just lived experience with everybody that comes to us. It's fascinating. It's really fascinating. If somebody says, I need that, give me that. And because I do have this privilege, no accent, white lady. I mean, if I'm calling on the phone, you don't know who I am, right? And so you don't know that you're supposed to be putting a barrier up in the way of what I'm asking for. So they are they're pushing me. They're not guiding me. They're directing me to things that I would never have thought of. Why are we doing this? And really examining whole systems.
Thank you to Blue Cross Blue Shield Minnesota for funding the Shiro's project. To learn more about Shiro's and Reviving Sisterhood, visit us at www.revivingsisterhood.org. Find us on social media at Reviving Sisterhood on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you.